Hello, and welcome to Roots and Branches, the Pinewood Alumni Podcast. Join us as we dig into the captivating stories and remarkable journeys of the alums who have walked the halls of Pinewood School. Through this podcast, we'll reconnect with our past, celebrating the diverse experiences, achievements, and memories that have shaped not only our individual lives, but also the legacy of Pinewood. Our alumni have spread their roots far and wide, reaching out into various fields, industries, and passions. So whether you're a current student, a fellow alumnus, or simply curious about the power of education, come explore with us as we uncover the inspiring stories that make up the lush canopy of Pinewood's legacy. Welcome to Roots and Branches, the Pinewood Alumni Podcast dedicated to celebrating the diverse journeys of our alums. In each episode, we dive into the lives of our graduates, exploring the roots of their experiences at Pinewood and the branches of their achievement beyond our campus. Today, I'm delighted to feature one of our distinguished alum, Max Darrow, from the class of 2012. Max's story is a shining example of the transformative impact of a Pinewood education. From his early days as a passionate member of Panther Prince, now known as the Perennial, to his current role as a weekend morning anchor at CBS San Francisco, Max has continually exemplified the core values instilled in Pinewood students: integrity, resilience, and a relentless pursuit of excellence. Throughout his journey, Max's dedication to his craft and his unwavering commitment to storytelling have propelled him to the forefront of broadcast journalism. Join us as we embark on a journey through Max's experience, from his formative years at Pinewood to his remarkable achievement on the national stage. Welcome to Roots and Branches, where the stories of our alum come to life, inspiring and connecting us across generations. Welcome, Max.
It's great to be here, Anne. Thanks for having me.
So today we get to turn the table on you, and you get to be on the other side of the reporting table. Thank you so much for joining us. Let's dive right in. And why don't you tell us a little bit about your journey, where you started at Pinewood, and how that kind of shaped your path towards journalism?
Absolutely. When I started at Pinewood as a freshman, it was my older brother who encouraged me to join the Panther Prince, which is now the Perennial. And he thought it would be something that I'd really enjoy to do. And he was right. I wanted to go into the sports side of things at that point. I was really interested in writing about sports. I was a big sports fan, but I also loved to play sports. I knew that I wasn't going to have a professional career in sports. So I thought, oh, let's chase the idea of sticking around the professional sports world with journalism. Loved it. Every year at Pinewood, I continued to really invest a lot of time and energy into being a part of the Panther Prince and growing as a young sports journalist at the time. My sophomore year, I was bumped up to a sports editor, I believe. It was sophomore year. Junior year, might have been an assistant sports editor, actually. Something in there. But it was cool. It was a show of confidence in me, and that was really awesome to get. And it helped build me up. Continued to push and push. And then junior and senior year, I was the editor-in-chief of the paper. And that was just an awesome experience. And I was guided by several great teachers at the time, one of whom is still there, Miss Wetzel. And she had some real-world journalism experience as well. So that was really cool to get to learn from her. And somewhere down there, I had just been introduced to the idea of a career in broadcast television. And somebody said, you can do this for a living. And that was all downhill from there, in a good way downhill from there.
Sounds wonderful. So did you play sports at Pinewood and do other things at Pinewood, or was your interest solely in journalism?
It was all across the board. My freshman and sophomore years, I played basketball. I played baseball all 4 years. And my junior and senior year, I played football. And the football team was still pretty new at the time. I think it was the second or third year of its existence. Third and fourth years of existence. My brother, he played in the first 2 years of it. I played years 3 and 4. Okay, yeah. So it was the third and fourth years of its existence. And it was a really cool opportunity to be a part of that. I also did a musical my senior year. It was the 25th annual Putnam County Spelling Bee. That was an awesome experience, being somebody who had never had a role in a musical before. And then various other academic groups, honor societies. That's one of the beautiful things about Pinewood, is you can do everything while you're there. You get exposed to so much, and you get a chance to really try your hand in so many different areas of academics, extracurriculars, athletics, you name it, you've got it. And they're still competitive. It's not, oh, you get to try. And it's no, you get to be a part of something that's still competitive and great while also casting a wide net and seeing what you really excel in.
Yeah, that's the really wonderful thing about Pinewood is the school itself is small enough, but big enough, right? It's small exactly. enough that you get to know everybody and you get a chance to try everything. And what courage you had to be in your senior year and jump right into a musical without having ever done one before.
I've never done a musical, but I had the music experience. So that maybe helped because at least I had something of that. I would have been, I was still terrified.
Yeah, absolutely. But it's nice because the community is so small that you feel even if you mess up, these are still friends that you can, that'll be there to support you and prop you up.
Absolutely. And some of those friends still really close with today.
Yeah, that's wonderful to hear. I hear that you guys just recently reunited to go and watch the production.
Yeah, that was a really cool, fun experience. A text message out of the blue from many people I hadn't heard from in a long time. And just this idea came to life and I said, yeah, let's do it. Sounds like a great time. And it was a really fun experience.
That's great to hear. So moving on to your college years at Syracuse, what drew you to the major of broadcast and digital journalism and a minor in psychology and political science?
So Syracuse has a phenomenal broadcast journalism department, really just a phenomenal communications school, but their broadcasting program was and is about as good as it gets. And probably junior year in high school, when somebody said you can do broadcast news for a career, somebody said, look at Syracuse. And my dad happened to go to Syracuse, but he went to the architecture school, not the broadcasting school. And somebody gave me a tour of a TV station, I'm pretty sure, at some point during high school. And then when I went out to tour Syracuse, I was like, oh, wow, this is incredible. And when I was fortunate enough to get in, there was no question I wanted to go. So when I was there, the broadcast journalism major made sense. They excelled in that particular field. They were very ahead of the curve. They were very advanced in all the latest, greatest technology and teaching. They had it. As for the minor in psychology and minor in political science, I'm going to get pretty nerdy right here. I thought it would be pretty important to have kind of a basic understanding of political science, even though I didn't want to go into political news reporting. I thought having a rudimentary understanding of poli-sci 101 effectively and taking six courses would be very helpful in getting that basic understanding of how certain things in that sphere work and getting an understanding of basically, I guess, some basic geopolitics would be helpful, which it has proven to be helpful. The psychology side of things, I thought as a job, my job will be to interview people on a day-to-day basis. So I thought it would be beneficial to have an understanding of how humans interact and how conversations go, because I thought it would make me be a better journalist and give me the tools to ask better questions and pick up on body language a little bit better and have just a general understanding of when you're looking at someone and conversing with someone, how to pick up on certain things so you can tailor it to a better conversation. So I thought, combine the three of those together, and you've got this nice like triangle, pyramid, whatever you want to call it, of important things to make me a better journalist.
Do you actually find that it helps in your real work?
Yes. I actually still use some of the tools that I learned in, I think it was human psychology. It was the second or third course I had to take for that minor. And it does help, especially when you are conducting an interview that can be tough sometimes, not necessarily like hard-hitting questions, but more so sometimes we are in situations where you have to ask hard questions in emotional moments. And without having to get too into the nitty-gritty of it all, sometimes the best thing to do in a tough time or in most conversations, but in especially an emotional time or when you're letting someone really open up to you, sometimes the best thing to do is to just pause and listen.
Yeah.
People keep talking then. And that's when I think sometimes you get the most human moments is when you're thinking as a job as an interviewer, I have to interview them. I need to ask them all these questions. Sometimes the best answers come when you actually just take a step back and listen.
Thank you so much for that. Absolutely. Those are all things that we can all take a lesson from is to pause and listen, regardless of whether you're actually interviewing somebody or just even in real life.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. Yeah. So you had a number of internships while you were at Syracuse. Clearly, Syracuse was a university that had a concrete program and was able to help students get internships. Tell me a little bit about how some of those internships benefited you or some of the challenges that it presented to you as a student in journalism at the time.
I think getting internships, regardless of the field, is one of the greatest things you can do because you learn very quickly if you have an interest in this field that you are thinking of pursuing. And so my freshman to sophomore year, that summer, I came back home to the Bay Area and I interned at the station that I now work at 11 years later. And it was really eye-opening for me. It showed me what life was like in the sports world at that time, because at that time, I still was more interested in going into sports journalism and I'm not in that anymore. And it was great to see that. And it showed me also some of the really important things about the job in that it's not a 9-to-5 kind of job. These hours are wonky. These hours are weird. If you're going to go into this field, don't expect to be at work at 9 and home at 5 or off the clock at 5. You are going to have schedules that could be 3 to midnight. You could work 2 in the morning till 11 in the morning. Even though I didn't do that shift as an intern, I was exposed to that. And it was great to see that. Sophomore to junior year, that's when I knew I was really committing to this field of journalism. And I knew I wanted to stay in it. I was bumped up to a sports editor, I believe, sophomore year. Junior year, I had stuck through the first 2 years of college without thinking, oh, I got to turn this around and find something else to study. And that summer, I ended up moving to Philadelphia just for the summer to pursue an internship at NBC Philadelphia. And it was really at that point, how can I make the most of this? I want to commit to this idea of going into journalism. I'm moving for a summer so I can pursue this. And it was just a great experience to then step out of your comfort zone a little bit, being in a totally new place, having what felt like somewhat of a real job. I learned from some of the best in the business that summer and then really took those skills back with me and lessons back with me for my junior year of college. And junior year is really, regardless of your field, again, and I'll say that throughout this whole thing, I feel like that's like really when you get into the nitty gritty and dive into the real meat of whatever you're studying, I feel like it's your junior year. That was helpful to have those lessons from those professionals. And then junior to senior year, that summer, I came back to California because I wanted to be home. But I got a job as an intern in Salinas, California, and I would commute from San Jose to Salinas, 61 miles, I believe it was, door to door there and 61 miles back. And I was doing this 3 days a week and getting real world experience now because I was in what was a smaller city, smaller market TV station where interns really were helping out in a lot of different ways. I would help out with reporters, I'd go out into the field with them. I really got a real first true look at what I would be doing less than a year from them in my first job as a television journalist. And that was truly incredibly helpful. And so all of these internships really helped out in different ways in preparing me for what would ultimately be my first job in Tucson, Arizona, a year later.
Can you elaborate a little bit more about sort of some of the things that you did as an intern? I think sometimes our students think I'm interning, say in your case, as a news reporter, therefore I need to or should be the one who's reporting or interviewing people. But I'm sure as an intern, you did a whole lot more than those kinds of things. Can you elaborate a little bit more on your jobs?
As an intern, honestly, it was the job duties were different. They put you through different things to do and learning the basics. You might help with taking notes down from phone calls of story tips coming in to sitting down and doing some writing practice with some of the writers or producers or helping put in little graphics and building things. But I think it's really what you make out of it. You go into an internship without having the expectation of, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that, because it's really whatever you want to make out of it. And for me, I knew that I wanted to go out into the field, and I was never reporting real stories or anything like that as an intern. I was just shadowing the reporters and photographers and learning from them every single day, just being a sponge, soaking up their routines of, how did this one reporter, how did she start her day in that meeting at 9:30 in the morning? And what did the entirety of her day look like from start to finish? Because some things worked, some things didn't. How can I learn from that? I think with whatever your internship is, it's really just making the most of every opportunity, being that sponge, asking a million questions, not getting embarrassed about asking questions, because how are you supposed to know the answers to most of these questions when you're just a college kid or even a high school kid? So just that, and that's, I think, the best advice I can give for anybody who wants to get an internship. Be the squeaky wheel, ask questions, ask for opportunities, and demonstrate that you'll make the most of an opportunity and actually be helpful and learn something from it instead of just asking to have the red carpet rolled out for you because you're an intern.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So transitioning to your professional career, what are the highlights and the challenges of working as a reporter in Tucson, in Las Vegas, and now back home into San Francisco?
Start with some of the challenges for sure. First challenges were just learning how to float and tread water, because you can have incredible preparation for 4 years, but in that first week on the job, you learn more than you did in all of college. And the stakes are higher, the pressure is more, and you just got to make sure you know how to get by. So I think the biggest challenge in the beginning was just learning what was up and down, regardless of all the preparation. And then moving forward, you start to hone your craft a little bit. You get a little more confident. You learn from your mistakes. You learn from your successes. And then the challenge became, at least in Tucson, okay, I know how to make sure I get the bare minimum done so I can get by every single day. I know the five things I have to do in order to be able to get by. How can I now push myself, on top of how I was getting challenged professionally by managers and mentors, how can I push myself to get better while never letting the basics falter? And so I think that was a challenge for me a little bit, because I wanted to push and push. But sometimes in the beginning, I would forget that you can challenge yourself and get creative and do all these fun things. But at the end of the day, if you still don't address the five things that you have to do, and five is just an arbitrary number, I'm just using that as an example. If you don't check off the five essential things you have to do, it doesn't matter how creative you got, because you didn't do the basics. And so for me, I think one of the challenges was, in order to be able to climb and excel, you have to slow down. And that was a hard one for me to learn.
Yeah, it's very counterintuitive, right? Because you keep thinking, I got to just keep working harder, working faster, climb higher. And so it's not very intuitive for us to think, oh, we should actually slow down and pay attention to some of these other little things that's coming our way.
One of my mentors, he told me, and this was probably 3 years ago, and it was a great reminder, because at that point, I'd been doing this for five years. And he gave me a great piece of wisdom that was just a really good reminder. He said, when you need to hurry up, slow down. And that's when you won't make your mistakes. That's when your mind will remind you of all the things you have to make sure you take care of. And when you feel like you got to hurry up, slow down.
Great words of wisdom. Absolutely. So I know you started this journey with a passion for sports. And in your career so far, you've had the opportunity to cover the 2022 NBA final in Boston, and most recently, the 49ers Super Bowl game in Las Vegas. Tell me a little bit about what that meant for you and what that experience was like.
For sure. So when I made the transition from deciding I wanted to cover sports to then deciding I wanted to do news, there was a lot that went into that, but I've never lost that love for sports. Even though I don't cover sports on a daily basis like our sports reporters and anchors do, I still love every chance I get to be involved with sports stories. And so for me, getting to cover the Warriors in 2022, game six of the NBA Finals, when they won and won the championship in Boston, I wasn't there to cover the players and the nitty-gritty of the game. I was there to just tell people here in the Bay Area and show people here in the Bay Area of a glimpse of what it was like for Warriors fans, not me being a fan, but for Warriors fans who made the trip to Boston to watch the Warriors and bring their stories back to the Bay and our viewers here. And it's just such a cool experience being surrounded by that energy and excitement. If the team you grew up watching's in there, it's almost hard, because you want to be a fan, you can't be a fan. You can really soak it up and share their excitement, the fans' excitement, in a wonderful way. And it was just such an awesome experience getting to do that. That's probably one of my top five to this date in my career. It was probably a top five experience getting to cover that game, be there for it, be there as the fans were going nuts. It was so cool. So that was special. And then this past year, just a couple of weeks ago, was the 49ers in the Super Bowl in Vegas. And that was, for me, just really special because it was like a full circle moment in so many different ways. I had reported in Vegas for 3 years. I lived there. I worked there. Now I'm reporting there for my home station on the football team that I grew up watching. They're in the Super Bowl. It's on our network. There were just so many different cool things happening all at once. I didn't actually get to stay for the game. I had to be back in the city on Super Bowl Sunday to anchor my show from San Francisco. But I was there for the whole week leading up to it. And being just a part of all of that, again, it's just an experience that I really would never take it for granted. And I remind myself how special of an experience it was. And again, just being able to share the fans' excitement as it grew and share their stories, some really compelling stories too, and emotionally special stories too, not for me, but just in general. There's a lot of wonderful stories that I got to share, and it was such a privilege to get to be one of the people to do that.
Yeah, what a thrill of a lifetime to be involved in both of those local Bay Area teams and be part of that journey of success for them and for you to share those stories with the fans of the Bay Area. So that must have been a thrill. So you've also done some interviews and reporting around our elections. During the 2020 presidential election, you conducted one-on-one interviews with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. What was that like? And I know if you can also add to that story, I know you somewhere along the way did a political story that earned you an Emmy. Can you also talk about that for us too?
Absolutely. So I guess I'll start with the interviewing of the politicians. It's always a different beast interviewing a politician because you always have to make sure you have your background like known, you've got it to a T, and you've done your research. And so I really did a lot of homework for those interviews. And kudos Pinewood, you taught me a lot of things, a lot of good teachers there who taught you how to do good research. And also how to make sure you comprehend what others are saying. And so I really did a lot of research, and I don't particularly script out questions for interviews usually, because then you're not listening. You're just remembering your next question. And you can be listening, but most of the time, if you're just focused on your next question, you're not always listening to what the person you're interviewing is saying. And those particular interviews, I did have a couple questions I needed to make sure I hit. And so there were... wasn't totally scripted out, but I had like my notes in front of me for both of those interviews, just so I could make sure I didn't miss anything. But there was a lot of research that went into those, and you only get so much time usually. I think I had 6 minutes with then Vice President Biden and 10 minutes with now Vice President Kamala Harris. But yeah, just a lot of research, and I was a little nervous, but not nervous to the point where it kept me up, if that makes sense. I'd done interviews with politicians before, and in my mind, I just had to tell myself, okay, just another one. Does it look like they're going to be the winner of the race at this point? Because at that point, it was pretty clear who the nominee was going to be. Yeah, pretty good chance that I'm interviewing the person who's going to be the candidate. Right now, they're not. It's just another interview. So... think of it as a city council person or something like that. So you're not going into it with your being too nervous or anything like that.
Yeah, what great strategy.
Thank you. As for the Emmy Award, so there's a regional Emmy Award for a story I did that election year in Las Vegas. So it was 2020. It was middle of the pandemic, and it was to the point where Nevada had moved to an all-male ballot election. And that was... new for Nevada. Absentee ballots had been a thing. Mail-in ballots had been a thing. But the idea of an all-male election was new for the state. And so we got together with our team and we decided we wanted to put the USPS to a test as good as we could, because some of the concerns that people brought up in stories to us previously when we had done quick stories on this was, we don't know if the USPS can handle this as a challenge effectively. And the mail will get there. There was concerns. So we decided, let's take some of those concerns and put it to the test. So we created 100 ballots. We took out a PO box, created 100 ballots. And this was well before the election, obviously. But we figured out like how much does an actual ballot weigh? What are the measurements and everything like that? And we picked addresses all over Southern Nevada and mailed these, or excuse me, we mailed them from numerous, like dozens of different mailboxes, PO boxes, handed it to a mail person, put them in apartment complex mailboxes, and had them all go back to this PO box that we had took out. And we wanted to see if, one, all of the ballots would get delivered, and two, if they'd get delivered on time. And then we would take those results to the USPS, to the Deputy Secretary of State, who was in charge of elections at the time, and to the Clark County Registrar of Voters. And all 100 ballots came back, if not early, on time by the deadline that we had set, and nothing got lost. And so we took those results to the various people in charge and asked them about it, presented the results to them, and then asked them about, brought forth concerns from voters to the people who were helping run things smoothly. And it was overall just a really cool piece to be able to put together. And I thought it was a special one to be able to take those concerns directly to the people who could answer those questions. Match that with our creativity. It was really a big honor to get, you know, recognized by our peers for that regional Emmy Award. And that was a special experience to get.
Yeah, what a great story, right? Because you do hear a lot of concerns, especially during the election season, as to how reliable some of these methods are. And I think certainly during that particular election, there was probably a lot more chatter than normal. So what a great way to tackle that, and the creativity you and your team had to actually follow through with the whole experiment. And kudos to those Pinewood teachers who were able to add to your Pinewood education experience so that you can think creatively and be able to prove or not prove through your science classes and all of that to get to this point. And so kudos to you for winning an Emmy. And what a special award that would be, a recognition for the work that you do in journalism.
Thank you. I was proud of that. It was a special one to win because it was a total team effort. Could not have pulled it off without so many different people having their hands in a project like this. And also, that's not typically you don't always get a chance to do something that's that in depth. Obviously, it wasn't purely scientific. There are variables, and this isn't saying that it's a perfect system or anything like that, but it was a really cool experience to put it together, have the opportunity to put it together, and then see it through. And just, again, couldn't have pulled it off without so many different people involved with this one. So I'm grateful for it still. And it was a special one to be able to win my first Emmy Award, regional Emmy Award for that. And hopefully there are more to come, but we'll see.
Absolutely. So what advice would you give to our students who may be aspiring journalists or thinking to build a successful career in broadcast journalism?
So many different ones, so many different pieces of advice. So let me see if I can tailor it for a second to our high school students. I think there are a couple. One, never stop asking questions. Ask away, because journalism is all about asking questions and finding answers to things. So be curious, ask questions, and don't stop asking questions. If you are interested at all in pursuing a career in journalism, it's not glamorous. So be ready to work, be ready to work long hours, be ready to work hard shifts, but also be ready to work in something where you're surrounded by a lot of people who are incredibly passionate about what they do. And I think as long as you go into it having that, if you think you're going into this because you want to be on TV or streaming, because that's probably where we're headed, if you want to go into this and be on TV and think somebody's going to do makeup for you and think that people are going to hand things to you and just you're going to just talk and be the face, that's just not at all how this goes. I still am my own cameraman. I am my own editor. I am my own writer. I'm a one-man band. And that's just the norm. That's how we do things. So most of the times when you see me out in the field and I'm talking in front of the camera, I'm talking to a camera on a tripod. There's nobody there running it for me. When I'm in the studio, it's different. But most of the time, we're on our own. So you're going to work hard, but be ready to work hard. And Pinewood prepares you to work hard. Whatever you want to do, Pinewood really does a fantastic job of preparing you to work hard and excel in whatever it is that you'd like to do. And I think that goes further than just wanting to go into journalism. Just be ready to work hard at whatever you do, and don't be afraid to ask questions. So those are two pieces. I'm sure I'll think of 17 more by the time we get off this interview, but work hard and don't be afraid to ask questions.
Yeah, absolutely. Because I look at your trajectory, you did the Panther Prints for 4 years, and then you did 3 internships every single summer. So it wasn't like you went to school and then all of a sudden popped into a TV station and they gave you the job. And you're right when you talk about all the different times, right? Because news doesn't come at 9 to 5, it happens 24/7. And so sometimes you will get that call and say, hey, this is a story we need to go pursue. And whatever you're in the middle of doing, if you're in bed, you'll probably get up and go drive to wherever the incident is and do your reporting at that point.
It just depends. For reference, I'll give you a look at what this week, my schedule this week. So granted, I had to fill in because somebody was sick. On Monday, I worked 9 to 7. On Tuesday and Wednesday, I worked 3 a.m. until 11 a.m. On Thursday, I was off. Friday, I'm working 9:30 a.m. to 6:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday, I'm working 5 a.m. until 2 p.m. Blah.
Yes, you have to be very flexible.
Yeah, it's not that glamorous.
Thank you for sharing that. How do you stay motivated and adaptable in an industry that's constantly evolving, especially with the rise of digital media?
I think the skills don't necessarily change, but the way that the shows are presented or going to be presented, that does change. And I think you just have to be willing to accept it. If you fight certain changes that are coming with technology, that's when you'll run into problems. But I figure even if I'm confused about something as it happens, or if I don't necessarily like the way that the change is happening in terms of how a story, you know, is presented, not the substance, because the substance of it, that's not changing, but the medium, the how we go about gathering it with a different tool, for example, or having to all of a sudden now say, oh, by the way, on top of your 5 o'clock live hit, we need you to do something for the stream as well. Saying fighting these things is not going to get you anywhere. Obviously, you can't always say yes to everything, but at the same time, I think just embracing changes is the way to do it. Because if you don't, some of these are just, they're going to happen. And you just have to move with the ship instead of go against the tide. And again, more technology, that's what I'm talking about, not substance, because the substance isn't, that doesn't change. Whether it's newspaper, whether it's television, whether it's streaming, the substance is the same. It's just transmitted in a different way.
Yeah. The only constant in life is change, right?
Yep. Be adaptable.
Yeah.
And it can be frustrating sometimes, but you grow, you learn, and sooner than later, just when you're used to the new thing, there's another new one that'll come to you. That's just how it goes.
Yeah. Do you have any upcoming projects or stories that you're excited to cover? The elections, any of those things?
It's tricky. There are so many different things happening this year. I think the thing that I'm really excited about, it's not one particular story in general. I think it's the tone of the stories that I'm working on at this point and will be working on. And that's really moving in a direction of human first, human character centric stories. So the substance of each story will be a little bit different, of course. And sometimes, most of the time, you don't know the stories you're going to be working on until the week of, sometimes the day of. But I think the thing that I've really enjoyed and embraced over the last couple of years is finding ways to bring the viewer into the world of the story. And that's by having a character guide you through the story. Instead of sticking a microphone in somebody's face and asking them 2 questions and moving on, I'll spend a little more time with the person so we can have a story that's really centered around the human experience. That could be a beautiful thing for a fun story, that could be a really difficult one for sometimes tragedy. But I think having a human guide you through the story instead of just a couple of quick sound bites from people without introducing who they are, I think that's been a really a different way to tell some stories. And I think I enjoyed it. It allows me to really dive into making these more relatable to the audience. And this is what a lot of journalists are doing right now. And I feel fortunate to be on a team that really strives for all of us to do that. And so I think it's not one story in particular, it's the tone of the stories that I'm really excited about.
Wow, that's a great answer. Because I think we are, especially in digital age, we're so quick with moving, bouncing from story to story, topic to topic, that sometimes we do lose track and connection of the human piece of all of that, the humanity that connects all of us.
Absolutely. And I think they're called news stories. We forget sometimes, like, it is a story. You're telling a story. It might be a minute and a half. It might be 2.5 minutes. It might be 40 seconds. But there is a story that you're telling there. And having a person to guide you through their experience just brings somebody into the world a little bit better than just summarizing what this person went through without introducing you to them and allowing them to open their world, not just to me in that moment, but to the viewers and whoever's watching or learning or just taking in this story. And so I think that's really important. And again, I just feel fortunate to be able to have the privilege to do that and have people be, you know, brave enough to open up.
Yeah, thank you. So last question, looking back on your journey from your high school to where you are now, what are some of the key lessons you've learned along the way that you would love to pass on to our listeners?
I think we'll go back to some of the early advice given here during our conversation. And I think one of the most important things to do is to take a step back and listen. I think that's incredibly important. And I also think the idea of slowing down is really important as well. And then they go hand in hand. But I think if you want to move forward, sometimes the best thing you have to do is slow down. And then if you want to make the most of an interaction, sometimes you have to stop talking and listen. And I think those go so much further than just what I do for my career. I think those are some things that people can just take to heart no matter what they do. And it doesn't even have to be professionally. That can be personally too. We all have ideas of what we want to do. We all have goals. We all have, I guess, benchmarks we want to hit. And so wherever that is, sometimes you do just need to make sure to remind yourself to slow down. And it's important because then you don't miss the little things too.
Yeah, great advice. Thank you so much, Max, for your time. I greatly appreciate it. What an honor for us to be able to speak with you and hear your journey and hear your stories. We wish you the very best in all of the future stories and endeavors that you're going to take. And we look forward to seeing you on the red carpet for your next Emmy. And come back and visit us sometime at Pinewood.
Thank you so much. It was great to be here. Go Pinewood, go Panthers, and best of luck to everybody who's graduating this year and who's moving on to cool, great things.
Thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
And that is another inspiring episode of Roots and Branches that comes to a close. We hope you enjoy this journey through the diverse paths our alums have taken, from their roots at Pinewood to the branches that have reached far and wide. These stories remind us that our time at Pinewood School was just the beginning of a lifelong adventure, and the connections we forge here continue to shape our lives in unexpected ways. Thank you for tuning in and for being a part of the celebration of our shared heritage. Remember to subscribe, share, and stay connected as we continue to explore the ever-growing branches of the Pinewood alumni community. Until next time, this is Roots and Branches, where Pinewood's legacy continues to blossom.